Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
On the other side of the street I knew stood a girl that looked like you. I guess that deja vu. I thought this can't be true, cause you moved to West L.A. or New York or Santa Fe or wherever to get away from me.
That's a drive by a train, as a matter of fact. Yeah, and your 50,000 watt music mother of the valley. I want to play to you for you. You're gonna hear an interview I did yesterday afternoon with Carlos Lopez Sr. and his wife Juanita. Their son lost his fight with post-traumatic stress disorder 7 weeks ago in Los Angeles. He'd moved down there to and he had a very successful career. In as an actor and making films, and so you're gonna hear his story here, but before you do, I want to play he made a film. It's called PTSD: An American Tragedy. I found not the whole film, but about a 12 minute clip on the internet. The part though that to me is pretty raw is. And a lot of veterans will identify with this, is the part in this clip where he's sitting down with a therapist, okay? I've been lucky in that the two therapists that I've been seen by were both Vietnam veterans. They were infantrymen in Vietnam. So it was like going home. The first time I walked into an office, right? He had all his I Love Me stuff up on the wall. And it was like home. Like, yeah, I've seen this. I know this. And we sat down, and he got it. But imagine the disconnect if somebody hasn't been there and they tell you, yeah, I understand, or, yeah, you know, I hear that a lot. You know, it's just not the same. I think the VA has to launch a huge program to create and pay them extremely well therapists that are combat veterans. Because that's what they ought to be really good at. And this is my solution to the VA. There's no reason that veterans need their own unique healthcare system to have their bodies taken care of with normal shit. Okay? The VA ought to be world-class, peerless in post-combat related mental health, in burns, and amputations, as well as traumatic brain injuries. Okay? Those things, those combat-related things, those military-related specialties, the VA ought to spend all their efforts and then farm everything else out. Like, give them a Medicare card, for God's sakes. Like, I don't need the VA, an entire system to treat my ingrown toe, nail, right? Anyway, just some thoughts. All right. So here's the audio of the therapy session. And again, this is Carlos Lopez Jr., a veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan, and found a peaceful place in the theater in expressing his experience in that stuff. And if you read about Carlos after he got involved in the theater, originally in Sacramento, then he moved to Los Angeles. He's been in movies and television productions, including Winter Soldier, Foot Clan Soldier, Teenage Ninja Turtles. He's been in iCarly. That was huge. And then TV's Operation Repo, and you'll hear his mom talk about that. And then the film that his parents will show on Saturday in Sacramento is called PTSD, an American Tragedy. So here's a little clip from a therapy session, that when I saw it yesterday, I was like, wow, he's not acting in this. So it's him sitting across from a white guy, looks to be probably in his 50s, in a blue blazer, a pair of khakis, and a white shirt and a tie. Okay? Cannot get more establishment than that. And then he's sitting there in a pair of jeans and a collared shirt, and a plaid collared shirt. But you can hear, listen to the anger in him and the venom that he speaks with.
Concentrate, realize that you're just a regular guy.
What the therapist just said, and it's tough to hear because of the music. He said, "You're just a regular guy who's made some mistakes," and so he gets this response.
Doc, I've been sitting here for the last 55 minutes listening to you gripe about life, love, and hardship. But what do you know, huh? I mean, really, what are your responsibilities? Your wife, a couple kids, your little dog. You imagine being responsible for an entire country, men, women, children, strangers and enemies, friends. And if you fail, their families fail. Their lives will never be the same. Life, love, and hardship, give me a fucking break. What about death, dishonor, loyalty, real responsibilities, and how do I handle them? I fucked them up with these hands, my bad decisions. How can I approach another soldier's wife and tell if it hadn't been for me, her husband would have made it home?
I understand your pain.
My pain? Do you understand my pain, Doc?
Yes, yes. PTSD has become a well-known American tragedy. It's a natural response to high levels of stress. The brain and mind have suffered severely. And now, your natural response to things is to react violently. You've been deeply cut, Victor. And your mind is weak.
Who the fuck are you calling weak, Doc?
Listen, Victor, I'm not trying to undermine it. Anybody can see. It's obvious you've been through a lot. You've been asked to do things that a normal person would never have to endure. That's why you're viewed as a hero, not as a vulture, not as a villain. You might feel like a monster, but you're not.
I just want to point out the disconnect. You know, when you're a civilian and you try to cross that gulf, you simply can't get there. As opposed to if you've been there, you know, and you know that they understand. And to me, the VA's got to get better at this shit.
Hero, soldier. A hero.
A hero who can't sleep? Who wakes up in the middle of the night and strangles his wife? Why would a hero strangle the only woman he loves? Why would God punish a hero with nightmares from hell? Doc, I just wanted to make a difference, and I failed in so many ways. Christ, I killed a little.
So you can see, and he kind of has a flashback about that. You can hear the venom, right? And you watch it, and you're sitting there thinking, he's not acting. He's just living. He's acting out something that he's done, a life experience that he's experienced, and you're seeing this disconnect at the VA. And the sad part is that a lot of times those guys walk out and they don't go back. All right, let me see if I can forward right to the end of this. All right, so here's the last part.
And now God won't let me forget. It's like he's toying with me. He shows me their faces every fucking night and they're haunting me, Doc. And what do you call it? PTSD, an American tragedy? What I call it, your God has forsaken me. My wife probably wants to leave me. My best friend probably thinks I'm weak. And I'm here with you talking about my problems like a fucking pussy. But hey, that's all right. You have to make a living too, right? You get paid to call me a hero, right? What is it, Doc? Huh? About $100 an hour? Extra 2 hours, Doc.
What's your cost for the last one?
All right, that's a therapy session, and you watch it, and you think, that's real. That's the anger. And so you're going to hear, that's Carlos Lopez Jr. produce that as a film student. I want to say he was going to school in the San Fernando Valley, northern part of Los Angeles. So with that done, here are his lovely parents. Carlos Lopez Sr., a veteran of the United States Army, comes from a proud family of veterans, and his wife, Juanita Lopez, in an interview that we recorded yesterday. We continue on a Tuesday. Almarin Radio here, and I got a phone call a week ago or so from a friend of mine who I played baseball with when I was a teenager, and his name's Chris Gandy, and he said, "Hey man, I want to ask you to help me out with something." And I said, "Okay, what?" He said, "Well, some friends of mine lost their son after his fight with PTSD, and they're having an event in Sacramento, and they're going to show a film that their son made. And would you have him on?" I said, "Absolutely. Give me their contact information." So joining me now is Carlos Lopez Sr. And his wife, Juanita. So Carlos and Juanita, first of all, thanks for doing this, and welcome to All Marine Radio.
Great. Thank you.
Well, and I should say there's a Marine connection throughout all of this, and that is your youngest son is a, what is he, a Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps now?
Yeah, he's at Rocky Lopez as a Lance Corporal right now, serving currently in San Diego, but he's been in 2 years.
All right. So let me ask you, how do you name your kid Rocky? That's not a Lopez. I don't need to get my secret decoder ring. That's a Hispanic name.
Yeah.
Tell me the story about Rocky.
Well, it came from other family members that suggested that Rocky would be a great name. I guess there was a movie, and someone suggested Rocky would be a new or young person's name. But me, myself, as his father said, is Anthony. So his full name is Rocky Anthony Lopez.
The Rocky Anthony Lopez. The so let's find out a little bit about you guys. This is just I talked to Carlos a few hours ago and Juanita as well, and our lives have intersected a number of different ways. But just you guys raised your family in Sacramento. Is that where you guys raised them?
Well, pretty much. We are kind of like a transplant. About 24 years ago. We're from the Morgan Hill area originally. So our children have grown up here in the Elk Grove, Sacramento area, and they consider it home. So they went to the high schools here, the junior high here, and this is home for them. So we are a transplant, I guess you could call it.
and how many kids you guys have?
We have 4, 2 boys, 2 girls.
All right. And we're going to talk about Carlos Sr. He was he's 35, and then your daughter, how old is she?
Carlos Jr. He was 35.
Carlos Sr. wishes he was 35. Carlos Jr. was 35.
Right.
Who wants to be a kid again, though, Carlos? Come on. And your daughter, how old is she?
Our oldest daughter's 40, and then we have another daughter, Jenny. She's 36. And then, of course, Rocky Anthony's 22.
Wow, you sound like my family. Our kids are 30.
There's a lot of conversion.
30, well, let's see, 30, 28, 24, and 14. Like, what?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, right in there with you.
Your family's a little younger, but you're almost there.
Before we talk about Carlos Jr., your daughter is involved in, or at least was involved in, domestic violence and works at a place in Sacramento that was near and dear to my family's heart, an organization called WEAVE that stands for Women Escaping a Violent Environment.
Right. It was our oldest daughter. She worked several years ago. She used to work about 8 to 10 years where she worked at WEAVE. She was one of the counselors, one of the advocates. She had a couple of different positions there. And so now she has changed over to special ed, so she now works for Elk Grove Unified.
Okay. They do great things.
That's our oldest daughter.
Right. They do great things. How does so let's talk about Carlos. How does he find his way into the Army? He grows up in the greater Sacramento area, and how does he find his way into the Army? Did you serve in the Army, Carlos?
Yeah, let me, I could do that. The Lopez side of the family has 50, 60 years of serving in the military, going back to my father and my uncles. My father, Salvador Lopez Sr., who's passed, served in World War II, 1941 to 1944, 45, during that era. But also during that era were my uncles, these are my father's brothers, Nick Lopez, and other uncles from San Jose, essentially the Avila family and the Torres family and the Loma Lee family. And so we come, I think, from a veteran's family who served during combat areas during that era. Then later, another generation, the Vietnam era. My uncle Joe Haro served in Vietnam. My brother in the Marine Corps. Again, in the Marine Corps, is a Vietnam-era veteran who served in Vietnam during the hot era of the Tet Offensives, if you might remember, in 1968.
You bet I do.
1969, he served honorably. He, too, I may say, is suffering or had suffered. He's still living with post-traumatic stress syndrome, having served in Vietnam. And then, of course, I served in the Army. And so me serving in the Army, I served in the 82nd Airborne Division, the latter part of 69-70 to 72, so the Vietnam era war was coming to a decline. You may remember under Nixon, there was a decline in the Vietnam War. So I think that Carlos Jr. saw me and then his uncle, Salvador Lopez Jr., and his grandparents. And I think he saw it from a family point of view. But also, I'll let Juanita speak on this. I think he saw it as an opportunity to grow and do something differently. He was 19 and ready for a change.
Juanita?
Carlos was someone who didn't really enjoy a lot of school, so his interest in college was kind of not there yet. And what happened was he thought he would go to the military, to the Army specifically, and go into what they called chemical specialists. The hopes that he thought maybe he'd do a bit of firefighting after he got out of the military.
Right.
And so he went in, but he went in, he enlisted prior 9/11. And then a couple months later, 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the chemical specialist was in great demand because, you know, they were talking about the weapons of mass destruction. So the chemical specialist people kind of went front line, and because they were looking for the weapons of mass destruction, and there was Carlos. He was in the thick of everything. He was there in the startup of Baghdad, Fallujah, Najaf. He was there when it was just the height of it all. And he legitimately signed up on his own. He was going to sign up with friends, and ultimately he was the only one of, I think, four that truly signed up and made it through the testing and everything. And there he was, 19 years old, frontline in Iraq. at the start of the war.
Okay, so he goes and he comes back. So he goes and he comes back. When do you all notice a change? Because, you know, one of the things that, you know, we do on this program is we talk about, you know, you know, you're not going to be the same. You know, you become a warrior for your country, and like everybody that, and Carlos, I'm sure you saw it in guys that you knew went to Vietnam, depended on their experiences. It changed them. And,
yeah.
And so one of the things that, you know, I think we have to do in talking about it and staying in touch is saying, it's okay. You know, it's going to change you, and that's normal. You know?
Right.
And so when did you first notice, a change in him? Did you notice right away when he came home, or did it take a while?
Oh, I think when he first came home on leave, the aggression was high. The anticipation of your surroundings.
Right.
He was always kind of viewing the surroundings, making sure they were the same. He was always yelling. that took us back because he was, Carlos was always the excited one in our family. But when he came back and he was yelling more, you know, we who are civilians, we are not used to that.
Yeah. Right.
And so, you know, we thought, okay, just tone it down. But it was in him, in the whole, like my husband says, shock and awe of where he was. He came home, he was just like that, very aggressive, very loud in nature, very authoritarian, kind of like, you know, kind of issuing orders. But that's what he was living in, and that's what he was surviving in. And we who were at home were not kind of used to it. You know, we were kind of shocked by it all. Because, you know, we're civilians. What do we know? But, you know, if they're being the warriors, like you say, their nature is to show aggression. Their nature is to take care of themselves at all costs. Their nature is to do what is asked of them by their leaders. And even if it's contrary to what they believe in, that's what they have to do. And so when he came home, we noticed it. We noticed it immediately. We just didn't know how to. Go ahead.
I can add that when he shared, when he came home, which we knew from the Los Angeles newspapers, one of his very best friends, Mark Zapata, who we met at Fort Hood, Texas, killed within the first 3 or 4 months of the campaign in Iraq. And he never forgot Mark. And he, we know that he was severely impacted by the loss of a very close friend, because they had, been in Fort Hood, Texas. They went to Iraq together. He went out on a mission with the Lieutenant Goings, and, within the end of the day, they come back and they found Ted, two of them had been killed, in action. And Carlos Jr. just could not believe that his friend was killed. And I think that was the beginning of what we know of other tragedies that he experience, because we have other photos of him, and he was photo happy with his friends and vice versa, of him in a large number of funeral services, if you will, with the boots and the cap on the weapon. And it just seemed like every month or every so often there was someone getting killed, dying in a tragic situation. And Carlos is there on the knee, literally on the knee in front of them, or on a flag campaign in celebration of the veteran, or, you know, the military guy. So we know, given 2001, 2002, 2003, where we were losing veterans, perhaps daily, I don't really know, he was part of that and seeing that. So when he came home, there's no doubt in our mind that that was in the back of his mind.
So he goes back. He ultimately deploys 3 times, yes? Twice to Iraq and then once to Afghanistan?
Actually, when he came from Iraq, he was, as we indicated, having a real rough time here as a civilian. He was 20 or 21. And he says, I need to get out of here, meaning out of Elk Grove and Sacramento.
Right.
And his mom helped him sign up for a civilian contractor's position at Kuwait Juanita, you might talk about that.
Yeah. What happened was he had enlisted for a couple of years. And so once his time frame was done in Iraq, he was trying to reengage in civilian life, and it was really, really difficult for him. It just didn't make any sense. You know, he had been so hard-pressed in combat, and then coming home to trying to be normal, it wasn't working for him. And so he felt at the time he needed to go back, but he went to Kuwait. And what he did, what he asked me to do was help him become a federal contractor under Combat Service Associate. And because technically he was out after 2 years
right.
of service, he went to Combat Service Associates. They took him, and they took him to Kuwait for a year. And at Kuwait, what he was doing was providing security for the military compounds that were there, the military bases that were there. So he was still within the military. He was doing everything with the military,
right.
but he was providing the perimeter security and then living in the community of Kuwait. So he did that for about almost a year, and then the military came calling back again for him. And initially we tried to tell him he had served his time. He was doing combat service associate services, you know, because they picked somebody else. And, of course, the military at that time was not buying that. So Carlos was called back into the Army, and he went off to Afghanistan. You know, combat service associates was really good for Carlos in the fact that he was sitting in the towers for much of the time,
right.
where he was alone with his thoughts, trying to get over what he experienced, trying to find where to put it in his mind and his heart. So he said the 12-hour days that he experienced there in the towers just gave him a lot of kind of time to decompress and try to reflect on what he had been involved in.
And still,
he had to go back.
Right,
he still had to go back.
And I'm sure he was there with other guys who had already fought and got out and kind of did the same thing he did, because that's a pretty common thing in terms of I come home and I can't talk to my friends anymore. I don't feel, you know, what do I do? Who do I talk to? Who do I tell about the stuff that I did, the stuff that I really don't want to tell other people? I could tell that to my battle buddies, but they're not around anymore, and how do I fit in?
That's
and
right.
I think a lot of the reaction is, I need to go back over there, maybe not the way I was before, because I don't know that I want to do that, but I'll at least be around my tribe, I'll at least be around my people, and that's a pretty that's a pretty common path.
That's exactly what happened. He came back and he had no one to, not even his parents, to address him in his experience after Iraq. So whatever he experienced and saw, we could not relate to or communicate with him about.
Was that frustrating for you guys? Because we talk a lot about, you know, the perspective of when you're going through it. The perspective of a parent or a spouse is different. Was that frustrating for you guys? Here's one of your babies who obviously is hurting, and yet you can't get to where you need to get to in order to help him. Was that frustrating as a parent?
You know, for me as a mother, it was very hard because, you know, I wanted Carlos to speak about what he had been involved with.
Right.
And there were a few times I pressed him, and he finally expressed some things to me, but he didn't want to because he said, Mom, if what I tell you, he goes, it will change your perspective of me. And I can't have that. He goes, so he was like, he was very concerned that whatever he would share would view him not well, view him in a way that was no longer respectful to the family, so to speak.
Right.
And you know, some of the things he would be yelling. He'd say, Mom, I can't tell you because if I tell you, you won't love me anymore, that kind of thing. And so I pushed him. I did push him as a mom. I pushed him and he did tell me a few of his stories, but it was really hard for him to give it out. You know, they're told in the military to really man up and, you know, hold your stuff in. And you could see he was like a pressure cooker. He was ready to explode. You could see it then when he first came back. And it was really difficult. It was really difficult to watch your son kind of suffering through this stuff.
Did he seek any help? Because in those days, it's very different than the military is today in terms of mental health awareness and treatment. In those early days of the wars, there wasn't that much going on relative to PTS. What? And, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, that's normal. You know, yeah, don't worry about it. We were not very quick on the uptake relative to that. Did he ever seek any kind of treatment or try to get help?
Just put it this way. He was still active in the military, and the word is active.
Right.
So where do you get help about the military when you're active? Because he was now ready to go to Afghanistan.
Right.
And doing what we call a third term or a third year in a combat zone. Afghanistan was where we re-entered, of course. So he was not in a position to ask for it. He was not yet discharged, right? He was still active.
Right.
There was no transition while you're active into civilian life. Like Juanita says, you have to man up. I suppose you can go find a doctor or a therapist while you're in the military, but on break like he was, meaning and he's on leave.
Right.
So, no, there's no outreach by the military when a person goes home and has this problem of post-traumatic stress or anything else. And even after he went from Afghanistan and came home, and he just went up another notch in terms of frustration and anger because he felt, now he's 24, now he's really angry, now he's seeing much more crap or garbage, if you will.
Right. So
we would not talk about that either. When he came out, there was nothing to reach out to. And, you know, I suppose he could have, but he tried to deal with it on his own.
What year does he go back to Afghanistan?
Pardon me?
What year did he go back to Afghanistan? What year was that?
Was it, I don't know, 2003, when it was 4? 4 or 5, right in there.
Okay.
Yeah, somewhere in there, yeah.
All right, so he comes back ultimately, and then after his Afghanistan deployment, is he done with the military?
Well, we think he's done. Now he's got 5 years, so right. 3 out of 5 years are active, and we think he's done. But as we know, under the law, once you're in, he signed up for 2, he served 5, but under the law, they can hold you for 8 years.
Right.
The military can hold you for up to 8 years.
Right, you've got a reserve commitment on the back end of that. That you're
exactly, and right. That was an era when reservists were being called, if you recall, including the National Guard.
Right,
because there was a lack of soldiers during that time. They brought down the National Guard and they brought in the reserves.
Right. My guests today from Sacramento, California, are Carlos Lopez and his wife, senior, and his wife, Juanita. And we're talking about events that surround their son took his life, Carlos Lopez, senior.
Junior.
I keep saying that. I'm sorry. In June of this past year. And we're talking about his life. There's a film that Carlos made, and they will show it at the Crest Theater this Thursday.
This Saturday. The 18th.
Okay.
Saturday the 18th.
And what time?
The doors will open at 11. We will have a celebration of life starting at 11:30. Somewhere about 12:15, the movie will start. Because, again, this is a celebration of Carlos's life. We've just put a spin on it, and we're putting a premiere of his movie on it. So it's kind of out of the box, you know, services.
Right.
But because Carlos had a passion for acting and theater, this was the only thing that made sense to us.
And you are honoring his life, so I would applaud you in thinking outside the bun and doing something that honors and celebrates him and his work.
Right.
So is the public invited? Carlos, yes. Juanita, who's invited to come to this?
Well, you know, honestly, I think anyone who is interested in knowing about post-traumatic stress a little more, this would certainly be an opportunity to see a movie and possibly see a lot of people who have had military experience in their background.
Right.
But I would say to you, realistically, someone at least 12 or older to this movie. This movie doesn't have any type of, you know, theater rating, but certainly is, as a mom, I would not take anyone younger than 12 to see this movie.
There's about 11 minute and 35 second clip of it, and I would echo what Juanita says. It's pretty raw stuff.
Believe it or not, it was when he first did this movie, it was a bit more rough, meaning a bit more real.
Right.
The thing I would like to say with all this is that Carlos, he was a proud soldier.
Right.
And when he came home, he wasn't feeling very proud for some of the things he had to do in service. But he had no means of expressing it. And what eventually happened is he went back to something he liked, which was theater. And when he was at Consumer Theater College, it reignited his storytelling ability that he had as a young person. And it was the theater that all of a sudden it gave him a place to express what he felt. And if that had anger, if that had, you know, raw emotions, then that's how the movie part came involved in his life. He always loved the theater. He always loved the ability to act. And so it kind of became kind of like almost a therapeutic kind of thing where it was good for him to go yell, scream, to be acting like a crazy soldier. To act as, you know, someone who just came out of war in a certain way, and it was a safe place to do on the theater.
Right, so
I'd like to add, this is an important benchmark, but what it is saying, had he not gone to the theater and gone that process and go later to LA Film School, he was certainly going into a different direction that may have gotten in trouble, like other veterans, because they don't know how to deal with the duress. What I'm trying to say is he or others might go into drinking and doing social things that may not be appropriate and may not be according to law. Because he was very aggressive like other veterans. The point is that I think what Juanita is saying is that he found an outlet that would extend, in my opinion, his life into something that he liked.
I just want to go back to the service on Saturday. So anybody who hears this, who is interested, is welcome to come to the celebration and the movie.
As one of the things I understand, it's not just the movie; it is the celebration of life, because the writer, the producer, the main actor is our son Carlos Lopez Jr. This was the first movie he ever created, and it was created and written by him because of what he had experienced. My husband said earlier he had a friend, Mark Zapata, who was, for lack of a better word, a battle buddy, that died. That impacted him, and he felt like he needed to tell the story.
Right.
That's been kind of what Carlos's life has been about. As young as he can remember, he's always been reciting. He's always been telling stories. He's always been watching the movies and picking the movies that he truly favored, and then he would recite them. So when he got the idea to go to Hollywood, I mean, literally, he was angry. He said, I'm not doing well here. And he and his dad had this little kind of blowout. My husband said, okay, here's a school, L.A. Film School. And they just pointed on a piece of paper. And before you knew it, Carlos was enrolling himself in L.A. Film School. You know, he went for a time being at Moore Park Community College.
Right.
And that's where he started this movie. He started the PTSD American Tragedy at Moore Park. And he actually won an award for it. But it was more raw than you see now. It was very raw movie back then, and he won an award. But he was also told at the time that this is a subject matter that probably won't go anywhere because people don't want to hear about PTSD. They want people to say thank you for your service and move on, because there's no involvement in helping somebody other than saying thank you, you did well, okay? And Carlos couldn't kind of stomach that. He would tolerate it, he would accept it, but initially he kept saying, you know, why do people say that when they don't really truly mean it? They're saying thank you, but they're not willing to put it, their child, their brother or sister on the line like so many other veterans do. They say, you know, you want to help a veteran? Go enlist, take his place, and serve like I served. And it was amazing how many people would kind of look at him like, are you kidding?
Yeah.
You know, but that's the reality. It's safer to say thank you for your service than go on your way. And so PTSD was something he had to produce. We were just amazed by it.
You know, it's interesting, and Carlos, your family is very much like this, but the defense of the nation has become a family businesses. There's certain families, and your family is one of them, who serve. My family serves. Both my sons are in the Marine Corps. And it is that way in certain families. It makes sense. They see that as their obligation. It's the way they were raised. But it's a very, very small percent of our population. And it's getting smaller. And it is sad. And there is, a lot of veterans feel like that. Don't say thank you for your service to me. And don't say it, kind of dismissive. Oh, thank you for your service. Oh, really?
And go on your way.
Right.
It's kind of like a phrase that picked up that many veterans no longer appreciate, and it's very hard words to hear for some people. But, you know, when you go through the grind time and time again, they willingly do so. Our veterans are honorable. They work hard, and then they want to move on in civilian life, get jobs, and support their families. And so there's this challenge that we have is this transition from military combat zone life to civilian life, and that's what the challenge that Carlos had, and a lot of our PTSD veterans have that are literally in combat zone where they see death. And death is the right word, and suffering, and I know our son saw that like others. But to get back to the issue for the movie, anyone is invited, it's public. Our GoFund account and our friends, many, many good friends, including the VFW and American Legion, have come through and they paid some money to help finance. So it's open to the public. We would love to see it full. It costs $950. It would be a wonderful thing if it met capacity.
All right. And again, the celebration starts at, the movie's at 12:15. The celebration starts at 11?
11:30.
Again, my guests are Carlos Lopez Sr. And his wife Juanita. They're the parents of a United States Army soldier and a United States Marine, and a proud family that served in World War II and Vietnam, and now in our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. After he came home from Afghanistan. You said everything was more intense. His anger was more intense. And he finds his way to where I went to junior college, Consumnes, we used to call it Consumnes River College. I think it's Consumnes Community College now. And he goes there. Had he ever been involved in theater or the arts prior to that?
Just a little bit in high school he had done. He had just did a couple of classes in high school, but he always had that passion for it. He just never really truly gave it thought until he came back, and then he enrolled at Consumnes. And I think what more than anything, it kind of opened his eyes to the idea of being able to tell the story. And so on stage, acting, it seemed like more therapeutic. It seemed more open to him. And, you know, that's how it started.
Now, in looking up Carlos's junior's acting credits, he went and he appeared in a lot of different television series.
Let's just go there for a moment, because after he left Elk Grove, he went to Moore Park, did the movie, and then LA Films. Then he got picked up immediately by a TV station for Operation Repo, and that was his really big leap to be on television for 2 years. and did acting immediately. And since the role of Operation Repo was one of semi-aggression when they repossessed vehicles, it allowed him to express himself in his own way and did very, very well. And after that two-year period on Operation Repo on TV, he was seen on television. He was picked up on commercials. He was picked up on iCarly. And so he was being seen and picked up. And he did this independently on his own. He did not have an agent. But wow. He would show up for the auditions and he would be selected.
Wow. Now, as he was, because it's really interesting, veterans deal, I shouldn't say just veterans, because, you know, my sister deals with post-traumatic stress as well. People deal with post-traumatic stress in a lot of different ways. Did being involved in the arts, did it seem to help him? Did he not have these episodes? Did they come and go? Did he seem to be adjusting better? How would you describe, as he kind of got involved, after your argument, Carlos, and he goes down to Los Angeles, and he begins to get involved in the acting and TV movie business? Did he seem to be getting better because he is finding something that he was passionate about?
It seemed like the acting really helped. It really helped because it was a free space to yell and scream. Like I said, one of the blessings that he got the role in Operation Repo, he could act like the crazy military guy
right.
on Repo. He could be the aggressive guy repossessing the car. And that helped. It definitely did help him. He seemed to be getting a little more calmer. But, you know, during the process, he did go to the VA, and he was assessed initially at 30% post-traumatic stress. And then another time he assessed, and he was assessed at 70% PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the big kicker with all this. He had also a traumatic brain injury. I saw his VA report, and I couldn't understand why he had a 70% PTSD assessment, and yet he had a traumatic brain injury. And it was my understanding the brain does not regrow, it does not regenerate, but he had a damage from all the IED, the explosions
right.
that happened in the war. He had damage to part of his you know, brain in the
right.
back.
Right.
And, you know, here he gets a 70% PTSD, and it made no sense to me, but I'm not someone who knows the VA well, but it's almost like they didn't even remember that he had a traumatic brain injury. So, you know, I say that because Carlos was doing remarkably well with his acting and going, it seemed like it gave him the rush he needed to survive what he was feeling a lot of, and so he got into eating well, you know, exercising a lot, and he ended up doing yoga for a while. So we thought he was really doing really, really well. He seemed like he was managing well. He didn't seem like he got a lot of help from the VA when it came to his handling his post-traumatic stress. And to my knowledge, almost nil on the TBI. Carlos was really trying to handle it himself. Because he looked well, because he dressed well, he wasn't homeless. I don't think he got the VA
attention.
Support.
Right.
Yeah, attention, that's a good word. That's what I'm looking for, that he should have had. Honestly, as the mother, that's what I was, because, again, he's a young man. He's on his own. He's
mm-hmm.
living.
Mm-hmm.
He had a good place where he lived. He was surrounded by many friends who loved him, and he from appearance wise, he looked like he was fine. But obviously he wasn't, because here we are almost 5 weeks later, and our boy is gone. The acting definitely helped, but if I was being truly honest as a mother, I don't think the VA helped him at all, because here we are. Is this space. And, you know, I can be really angry about it if I really get going on it. But there's no point. It doesn't bring my boy back, our boy back. He's gone.
Let me add a little bit to what Juanita says in terms of the VA Veteran Services. And this has to do with Carlos Jr. and I think there are a lot of veterans who have emotional and mind problems like PTSD. The Veterans Administration's process to get evaluated in Los Angeles, and I don't know across the country, is very, very poor. You go in, you try to make an appointment, and if you get through to talk to somebody, they'll say, we'll either call you or we'll send you a letter. Now, waiting for a letter from a government agency like the Veterans Administration is the wrong way to do business. And I can tell you out of complete anger that when our son tried to go back into the VA for post-traumatic stress evaluation and reassessment, it took the VA a year to set up an appointment for an evaluation and assessment. We know this for a fact because by the time we got to pick up Carlos's body and bring him home, he just so happened to have a letter from the VA office in Philadelphia that says, we now have an appointment scheduled for you in 3 days in Long Beach at 7:30 in the morning. He had been waiting for a year for an evaluation and assessment, and he got that letter. We saw it. I have it in my home. And you got 3 days, and if you can't make this, give us a call. That is absolutely ridiculous and unacceptable. Carlos had to go through that. How many other veterans have to do that? You know, this is where we probably need a doctor, a therapist outside of the VA, because that process is very, very poor. It's very, very bad for our veterans, which is probably why 20 to 22 are dying every day. The VA does not do a good job on serving our PTSD people, our veterans. And in my opinion, as a veteran, if I have a problem like this and I need to see a doctor, as soon as I get out of the military, I should be in within 30 days to see a doctor if I need to. And that's not happening.
You know, and it's interesting. Obviously, I was an officer and I'm older, right? We talk about Carlos a lot, and that is, look, if we go down there, and we're men in our 40s and 50s, and we're arguing with the VA, and we've been around the system for a long, long time. What is it like for somebody who's been in the Marine Corps or the Army for 5 years and then got out? What do they get treated like? You know, they just, okay, all right, I'll call you in 6 months. And
I think if I was to say from what I heard from Carlos, I don't think they believed him that he was sick. I don't really think because he had a place of residence. Right. He had, he had gone to some training, that kind of thing. They didn't see him as someone who had post-traumatic stress. They saw him as someone who had to prove he's entitled to services. I heard that from him time and time again. He has to prove to them that he could, that he needed their services. And like my husband said, he had waited for so long because I saw the VA report. It said he had 70% PTSD. It said he had a traumatic brain injury. I couldn't understand why they gave him that type of an assessment when he had a physical injury on top of a mental injury. And then from what we see from his medical reports, there's never anything to address with PTSD like psychological cancer or whatnot that he was waiting for. He was at a point where evidently it was bigger than we really knew. He was at a breaking point, and we didn't know he was at a breaking point. And apparently the VA did not. So how does someone who's young like him, like you say, that the older ones go around and around with the VA?
Yeah, we don't take no for an answer. We don't take their bullshit. But a younger guy, he's just not old and mean and nasty like we are.
Right.
And they believe.
Yeah, because they're trying to still remain respectful, because they just come out of the military where they're you know, you're yes ma'am, no ma'am, yes sir, no sir, right? But as you get older, you know, even someone, I'm 65 years old, sometimes I don't give a crap, excuse me, about what somebody will say or not, because I am older, right? Because I go, you know, I'm 65, I've been around the block a few times, I get this. But you're right, someone who's in their 30s, you know, how do they cope with a system that is so huge?
Right.
And the fact that Carlos, you know, he was waiting for this physical assessment. Can you imagine our disappointment when our son dies on a Sunday, and on Tuesday I'm going to the mailbox, and there is the assessment that says, come in for your psychological appointment. He was dead. Yeah. He was dead 3 days, and he was getting that letter. Can you imagine what we felt when we got that? Can you imagine how we felt getting his mail and seeing that he was working so hard to get what he needed, but it was too late? It was way too late.
The bottom line, the Veterans Administration failed our son, and like they're failing so many veterans. And we're talking about this word called assessment and evaluation for PTSD. There's another word that we should use, and that's just medical services. When a veteran needs medical services, it's not an assessment issue. It's like, treat me now because I'm hurting. It's not an issue. Well, let's evaluate whether you need treatment or not. Think about that. Let's evaluate whether you need treatment or not. No. If a veteran needs help, medical help, if a veteran has a missing arm or a missing leg, oh, we can see that. Let's see what we can do to help alleviate the missing arm or leg. But a veteran says, I've got stress, anxiety, and bad dreams, and I may harm myself. Oh, wait, we'll make an appointment for you to talk to somebody 3 months from now, maybe, and we'll assess whether we give you attention. That's what's wrong with the system.
And let's not forget the Ambien that you give them and say, oh, here, take this, go to sleep. That's one thing you don't want to do. Is have dreams, and they give you Ambien to go to sleep.
But that's but I will tell you this: that's the way they do it. Here's the bag of drugs. There's I don't know. There might be, you know, 5 or 6 drugs in there, and go to group therapy, and then it's like I need somebody to talk to. That I will tell you this: I thought that I was really lucky when I went to therapy. Both of my therapists were Vietnam infantrymen. They were Army guys, so I had to take that with a grain of salt, Carlos. But I mean, how it was awesome. I mean, they were from my tribe. I walked in, and by the way, Juanita, you don't have to watch your language. This is all Marine Radio. You say whatever you want. But I remember I walked in, and the first day, he looked at me and he goes, Matt, can I tell you something? And I said, yeah. And he said, you're fucked up. And I started laughing, right? And he said, but you're going to be all right, okay?
Yeah.
The best thing you did was come here, you're going to be all right. And it's those veteran centers that were created by Vietnam veterans, because they didn't have that help. And your record stays in those places, and you walked into those things, and it was some of those crazy Vietnam veterans that were sitting behind the desk helping people, because we have been the beneficiary. And it's heartbreaking to hear your story. You know, your son's trying to get help, but he's taking people's word. Did you now, prior to him taking his own life, did you notice that things got worse? Did he say anything? Or
in the last 2 weeks, we did notice he had called us, and he was having, in his own words, he had high anxiety. He could not sleep. He was having bad dreams. This is his words. And he was starting to get delusionary. Again, this is his words.
Right.
And started using words like, I don't know what's real anymore. And so he reached a point where he didn't know if it was reality or in a dreamland. And we as parents who have seen our son strong and healthy have to believe either he was extremely, extremely delusionary and in a dream when he decided to get his weapon and end it as part of a dream, or did he end it because he was so angry with his circumstances, with the lack of services by the VA and other, you know, personal items potentially?
Right.
We don't know. That's one thing we will never know. But what we do know, he needed the help, and he never got it.
I want to ask you both, and you might have different answers, so feel free to each of you answer it in your own way, but what do you tell other parents? And I know this is not that far in the rearview mirror for you all. You're still dealing. This is going to be the celebration of his life on Saturday at the Crest, and so you're not even done with that stuff yet. But so if there's parents that are listening to this that have sons or daughters that are veterans and that still struggle, do you have any advice that you give to them?
You know, there's only one thing there's one thing that really came to my mind that I don't know how this would be done, but if I had to do over, I would ask Carlos to give me consent to hear what he was being told by the VA. I think he would have made a better difference in his medical health had I or his dad been able to go in there and sit with him in one of the appointments, not because he was someone young and needed that kind of help, but I think sometimes medical people need to have witnesses to what they tell these guys. And because when you go with someone who's elderly and you're the person, the younger person, to hear what's being told to the elderly, I can tell you from my own experience, they get better service because someone is witnessing it.
Right.
And the reality of it, I know Carlos was a man on his own right, but in hindsight, if I would have asked of him something and say, let your dad and I be able to go with you, we want to hear what they tell you. You know, we want them to see that you have family who are looking out for your interests. I think you might have gotten better service had there been a witness to some of the stuff they were telling him and giving him. Because I can tell you, as care providing for an elderly parent, you have the right to say, hey, not that stuff, not that drug. You're not going to give that to my dad. You know, you're not going to give it to it. That's something I would have wanted to do in hindsight. I didn't have the knowledge, or maybe, I don't know, maybe the guts to really ask, because I thought the VA would do well by him. You know, that's kind of a naive civilian comment, but I really believe that they would care of him.
Most people do. Well, they know where they know what they're doing, and when he goes there, they'll take care of him. And I think that's everybody's default position. And sadly, let me just tell you, I can't tell you how many times that I've had veterans either call or email me or my friends. I just stopped going. You know, I went there, I got an appointment. And so once you get an appointment, okay, that Carlos had so much time, you know, had such a struggle getting, you go there. A Marine that I know, who was in the city of Ramadi in 2005, but he's a PFC, Lance Corporal when he got out, and he said after the fourth time I went to therapy, and after I'd seen my fourth different therapist, I threw the medications in the garbage, and I didn't go back, and I haven't been back since. And those stories go on all over the country. I had another Marine tell me,
right.
One tell me
yeah.
That, you know, and he had a female therapist who wasn't fortunate like I was to have a veteran, a combat veteran to talk to. Mm-hmm. She was a female in her 30s, and she said, you know, you have to get over this. It's kind of like breaking up with a girlfriend. And he said, I left because the thoughts that went through my head were, I want to kill you. And I said,
he said,
I can't do this. You don't even know. And I want to say this, but and Carlos, I want you to answer the same question. But the scene where he sits with the therapist in the 11 minutes that I saw is, you can see it coming out of him, right? You can see the way he spits when the doctor says the word weak, the way he spits the words out of his mouth. I was sitting here watching it, and And I said, he's not acting that. He's living that. And
right. He's insulted.
Yeah, you can see it.
He's insulted because he's a veteran who's been in combat in Iraq, Afghanistan, and seen death. And here you have a psychologist with 8 years of college who has no idea what he has gone through.
None.
So the psychologist picked the wrong words. Totally.
Right. So, Carl, how about you, Carlos? Do you any advice?
I have what I would call half of the advice that I took from a work session with the VA hospital in Sacramento. When my brother, who's got 100% post-traumatic stress syndrome, invited me to a session with a psychologist, this was a group session, and there was this guy, really of Filipino descent, I thought was very, very good and very humorous, basically said, when you have a veteran coming out of Iraq or Afghanistan, and they're angry and they're frustrated and short-tempered, the first thing you don't want to do is argue with them. You're not going to win. You're just not going to win with a guy that's just come out of combat zone. So please, for your own mind's sake, etc., don't argue with your angry son or daughter. Don't do that. All you do is penetrating the frustration for the veteran coming back. I took that to heart because for the additional 8 years we had with our son after he came from Afghanistan, I made a point of trying not to debate anything with my son or argue anything. Some fathers in our own machismo will say, no, son, you can't do this, or that's not the way of thinking. The moment you trigger that anger or feeling in a veteran, it just chills. They'll scream at you right back. Not that they mean any disrespect. That's just a response. So there again, I say to families, don't argue with your son who has come out of a combat zone. If he or she wants to talk about it, so be it. Give him the entire table. Give him the entire hour, which they won't take, but give him the entire time about it. That's number one. So again, don't argue with your veteran coming home who's angry. That's a no-win situation for a parent. I would say the second thing is this. If our son, in fact, we knew he had post-traumatic stress syndrome, and we had known all the details of lack of service from the VA, and he's waiting months and even years, we would have gladly paid, if he agreed, for a therapist and pay our own pocket, get a loan, whatever it takes, to help him pick somebody that he liked that could help him, to help him. And if he had to pay out of our pocket, you know, because he needed help, whether it be one person, like a counselor or a therapist, at least we would have tried it. The other alternative we hear is veterans groups, to be with your own friends, people who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, I hear that bikers, Vietnam era veteran bikers,
right,
who are my age, 60, 65, 70, who suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome, are a tight team, and they're veterans, and they're living longer. Their quality of life is somewhat diminished, but they have a brotherhood among them, so they can talk and cry and have a beer together over their experiences in Vietnam and share their feelings. And I would say that's the challenge of Iraq and Afghanistan young men. They're 25 to 35 when they return, and many of them are not willing or can't express their feelings. Certainly our son had deep feelings. He had a deep conscience. And I'll say this, he had such a deep conscience that whatever he did to hurt anyone else in a military zone clearly affected him.
Right.
And it's not an issue of guilt, it's an issue of remorse. And I saw the remorse in my son's eyes. So yes, the last few weeks, even the last couple of years, I can say to you and the public that our son had a sickness in his eye that we could not reach, and it had to do with the pain I feel that he experienced in a war zone in both Iraq and Afghanistan.
In one of the things that I read about Carlos Jr., it said he served his country honorably and that he was a soldier of God. Explain the soldier of God thing.
That's how he kind of viewed himself. We brought up our children in the younger days. We brought them up Catholic. Carlos had a great, what's the right word? He liked the arch, he respected tradition, but he liked the idea of Michael the Archangel, God's warrior. Carlos saw himself in the military as a warrior, but because the military in some of the things that they do kind of goes contrary to some of the things that you learn when you're getting spiritual, religious guidance kind of thing.
Right.
But because he had the affiliation with Michael, he always said, you know, one day, Mom, I'd like to be like Michael the Archangel. You know, that was his kind of little thing that he thought of, because he saw himself doing good for God. He saw himself as a person who wanted to do good for others. And that's how he saw himself, because I would read to him about being a soldier of God from the book of Timothy in the Bible. He believed it. He believed that there were good things that you did for people that were designed by God. But just as there are good things, there are bad things that are done in the military that always kind of go contrary. And I mean, I don't know, tell me if I'm stepping on the wrong thing here.
No.
But
hey, Juanita, you're a mom, okay? Both a soldier and a Marine. You can say whatever the hell you want to.
But as his mom, he believed that it was his role to do good for people. That's how he saw himself. He saw himself as helping people. And yet, being in the military, it did provide some conflict for him, because he lost a good friend.
Right.
And the way it happened was in contrary to what he believed and read in the Bible.
Right.
You know, something like war, it challenges your faith. It really, and then when you see the death that soldiers see, it challenges what they believe and their belief system in God. Carlos always saw him as himself as someone doing good for the benefit of God and country. That's what it was about, God and country. And Carlos saw himself in that way, that he too would like to be a soldier of God and do what was right.
You know,
the thing that as a mom, I just wish they would have done right by him.
You know, it's interesting. Michael the Archangel, my name is Michael, right? And so I used to say his prayer, and I was raised Catholic. We don't live that far from each other, right? I didn't grow up that far from you guys. And I grew up Catholic as well. And then you go and you look and you say, where's God here? Where is he? You know, and I remember my dad got mad at me. He said, you know, I'm glad you're, the first time I came home, he said, I'm glad you're back. Do you know how many prayers I said to get you back? And I looked at him and I said,
yeah.
I said, your prayers don't mean anything. I've seen guys who pray their ass off who get killed. I see the biggest scumbags on the planet who should be dead, and they somehow or other escape with their lives. So, look, I appreciate that you pray, Dad, but the God who governs the flight of metal is not listening to you. And he got really mad at me, but it just goes to your point, Juanita, about it does change your faith because of what you've seen. And so it certainly shakes it. It certainly shakes it. Let me ask you each one more question, and then I'll let you go. And my guests today have been Carlos Lopez Sr. and Juanita Lopez. They're the parents of a proud Marine, Rocky, who's currently serving on the East Coast, and their son Carlos Jr. Took his own life at the end of June. On June 24th here, and they will celebrate his life this coming Saturday at the Crest Theater in downtown Sacramento. It's on K Street, for those of you that can get there. And the celebration starts at 11:30, and the movie starts at 12:15. What do you want people to know, Juanita, that I have not been smart enough to ask you?
Okay. I would like people to know that our son was a proud soldier. He was proud of service. He didn't always agree with what was done, but he was proud. And when someone dies the way Carlos dies, sometimes people avoid you because they don't know what to say. They don't understand why would he do that to himself? Why would he put his parents through this? I would like just people to know that Carlos was a good human being and did well for himself in the 35 years. And as his mother, it doesn't matter how he went out. It matters how he lived. And in 35 years, our boy did a heck of a lot of living. And loving of family and friends. And remember that. Don't remember how he went out. Remember that he lived well.
Carlos,
thank you.
No, Carlos, what haven't I been smart enough to ask you that you want people to know?
Well, I think you have just a good discussion, but I think what people have to know, what Carlos would say, that there are casualties in overseas like Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're dying over there, and the casualties are continuing once they come to the United States home, and the casualties are happening daily. And again, the facts are there as many as 20 a day. And I think that the government, as well as civilian services and family members, have to figure out how to help these veterans with mind injuries, and they are injuries of the mind and the brain when they come home, and to help them, whether it be through a veterans group, a bikers group, having a pet like a dog or a horse, therapy. I don't think a lot about medication. I think most of it's a cop-out.
Right.
I don't think a lot of it helps our veterans. I think it puts them in bad moods. And so I think that the issue of post-traumatic stress syndrome, disorder rather, in my opinion, is a lifelong condition after they return. For many, I wish it were not the case, but I think it is the case. And maybe there are some that are cured, and I don't know anyone that's cured, frankly, to be honest, that's cured from it, because these memories, these activities that they were in a warlike zone continues in their mind indefinitely. And I use the word trauma. They truly had traumas overseas, and that trauma, the feeling of the trauma is still within their body and mind. And so they need service, and they need it immediately, not months and years later, but immediately.
You know, a guy I had on the radio, you know, it's really interesting, Carlos, and because you're a Vietnam-era guy, a lot of the things that I know about post-combat-related mental health come from Vietnam guys. The first piece of advice I got relative to mental health was this. Hey, you know you're never going to get over this, right? What? Yeah, you're never getting over this. What does that mean? Why would you say that to me? Because you need to know. Who told you that, Vietnam guy, when I went through something similar? When this reaches out and grabs you, just know that that's normal. Right? Your life's going to change, but there's nothing wrong with you. You can't go through this without it sticking to you. You know, Carlos, most guys don't get that advice. I did. I was lucky. And, from one of my sergeants, one of my senior sergeants in the Marine Corps, gunnery sergeant, walked up after a helicopter had crashed and pilot decapitated, co-pilots crushed to death, two of the Marines are fighting for their lives, and you're trying to save them, and they're dying, and there's nothing you can do. And then if you, I remember talking to a kid and who was struggling in Fallujah in 2006, and I looked at him and I said, "You think you're fucked up, don't you?" And he looked at me and he kind of like raised his eyebrows like, "Yeah, I do, sir." And then I said, "Well, you are," which made him laugh. And, but we're gonna help you learn to coexist with it because it's never going away. But you can learn to coexist with it. And we'll help you through it because we're all doing the same thing. And those
are the key words.
Right.
I think our veterans have to learn to coexist and try their best to manage this condition, this disorder, and have a better quality of life, understanding they have a condition. And when they're tired, they rest.
Right.
And when they're in a bad environment, they get away from that environment and rest their mind and rest their spirit. So I think those words are correct. They have to manage the disorder that they're in to improve their quality of life.
All right. The celebration of life for Carlos Lopez Jr. This Saturday, Sacramento, California, at the Crest Theater on K Street. The celebration starts at 11:30. The movie starts at 12:15. It's been my honor to have Carlos Lopez Sr., a veteran of the United States Army, and his wife, Juanita Lopez, my mother of four, and sounds like a grandmother, too. So, Carlos, Juanita, first of all, thank you for coming on All Marine Radio and telling your story, and all the best of luck to you and your family. God bless you. You sound like wonderful people, and I can't say... how sad it makes me that the country that your son loves so much, that he fought for, failed him when he came home and needed it. And it's just heartbreaking. And thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you very much for having us. Thank you so much.
Now, Juanita, when I come to Sacramento, are you making dinner? Do we have to go out? How's this all going to work?
I'll make dinner if you like Mexican.
I love Mexican. Are you kidding me? All right. I'm fired up then. All right.
Give us a call. You're welcome.
All right. I've got
your... Anytime. Just let us know and you're welcome to our home.
We're Marine. You got a Marine. So you're
yeah.
in the, so, well, you're in the tribe anyway, but you're in the tribe. So that'll be great. No, I will call you up and we will meet soon. Thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you.
Great.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.
What an unbelievable little piece of audio right there. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Let me just jump in on the backside. I did that interview yesterday, and sitting here listening to it, when she says the conversation she had with him, where he says, if I tell you these things, you won't love. You won't love me anymore. Can you imagine that? A son saying that to their mother? It's just, you know, you hear this stuff, and it just, it's not heartbreaking, it's heart-crushing. And then she talks about, can you imagine how I felt as his mother, opening letters that said, you know, we have an appointment for you. And then when they say, hey, I don't think the VA helped my son at all, just brutal stuff. My thanks to Carlos Sr. and Juanita Lopez for doing that. And again, if you're in the Sacramento area, Saturday, the doors open at 11. The service, the celebration of his life starts at 11:30. The movie about 12:15. And a great young man who set his life to do something good. Much success in acting. We didn't even talk about that. Starred in a show, in a reality show called Operation Repo, where they repossessed cars and video and made shows out of it. in the San Fernando Valley. So anyway, more of Almarine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.